Hello and welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast, the final pod of the season. By my count, this is number 64 of the campaign. It has been a long, long year in rugby. But thankfully, Ireland gave us a lot to talk about at the weekend and a lot of good stuff to talk about with Bernard Jackman and Johnny Murphy this week. 25-24 winners against South Africa to draw the series. Just a second ever win for Ireland down in South Africa. Two drop goals in the final 10 minutes from Kieran Frawley, seeing Ireland coming from 24-19 down to win the game and level the series. Unfortunately, no series decider. Bernard, it's such a pity we don't have a third test this week, isn't it? I know we've said for ages, God, this season's been long. I'm looking forward to the holidays. God, I'd love a third test this weekend.
Yeah, look, I think we all would. There's a rivalry there between these two teams now that leaves you wanting more, no matter how much you get. Like, it's the third time in eight months they've played, and all three games were intriguing, fascinating. And you're just looking forward to the next one. But no, I think the players, look, both teams deserve a break. Obviously, the Box won't get one for a while, although they will get a chance to rotate some players for the Portugal test, but they're still have a complicated calendar, whereas our players will get 5-6 weeks off, and how well deserved. And I think they can go on their holidays now content that they have shown what they're about, and I think character was something that Andy Farrell tapped into massively this week, but also, you know, skills under pressure and intent and physicality were all there in absolute spades. And I think they shocked the Box. I think the Box probably felt they could bully Ireland, and that wasn't the case. And that hasn't been something that we really knew was there. We knew this team had, you know, resilience and they could play really good rugby. But could they match a team who were bigger than them? And up to now, there's always been that doubt. But certainly in the last 2 weeks, I think we've stood up to a very, very physical and powerful side and have held our own, which is massive.
Yeah, and Johnny, I would say for the first half on Saturday, Ireland more than held their own physically, like came absolutely flying out. And I know there was Andy Farrell and Caelan Dyers had spoken about how the fact that there was some fairly honest words used across the week after the way they'd started the first test in Pretoria. But like you look at it, Ronan Keller, just as he did in the World Cup, came in with a massive tackle on Quagga Smith straight from the kickoff. Joe McCarthy was really, really on it early on and was, you know, breaking the gain line. Kelleher was excellent throughout that first half, as was Robbie Henshaw as well. And aside from the scrum having a few issues, Ireland physically really, really put it up to South Africa in that first half.
Yeah, massively. And I also think you can include James Ryan in that. Yeah. I think his influence throughout the game was massive. He was back to his best, and I suppose towards the end, from an Irish perspective, it's been a bit frustrating for him in terms of where he's seen himself. But then you look at the overall selection and playing Byrne at six with, you know, McCarthy and Ryan in the second row, they really bolstered that physical edge. But I think, you know, Kelleher was brilliant, but I really do think James Ryan really led that physical edge, and he was on the line for the 80 plus minutes. And it was great to see him put in a performance like that. But yeah, I think, you know, we're South Africa a bit shell-shocked in terms of how Ireland started and where they were. You know, obviously they got the momentum back after half time, but that first half performance was off the charts in terms of physical level and their intent. You know, at every breakdown and nothing was, you know, South Africa would talk about battle stats, but like Ireland were just, nothing was done. Like, they just kept going. They were relentless in that first 40 minutes.
Johnny, let's skip right ahead to the final 10 minutes and Kieran Frawley's heroics. With whatever, 10, 12 minutes to go, and South Africa have just nudged themselves out into a 5-point lead through another Andre Pollard penalty. What odds would you have been looking for if you were to part way with €5 for an Ireland win?
Yeah, I was definitely one of the people that were going, oh, here we go again. You know, you look at all the high intensity tests that they've played over the last, however he said, whatever, 60 odd weeks, you know, every one where, you know, including the Irish provinces, that they were in those games where you felt that, you know, this was just going to be history repeating itself over the last kind of 12, 13 months from, you know, the New Zealand game to, you know, to the English game in Twickenham, to the provinces, Munster and Leinster. And then obviously the first test, you're like, right, here we go again. You know, it would have been a long, because the momentum had just completely shifted. And then something that we haven't seen, I suppose, is, and it just shows you how tight and how close all those games that I've just mentioned that they've lost, their execution was off the charts in the last kind of 3 to 4 minutes, excluding the line out where they go to the corner. That was certainly the moment where you're like, right, that's it. We've brained it again. And then you know, the wherewithal from Frawley to go, okay, well, we messed that up. Look, let's go for the three here, get back within two, the smarts, and then the execution. And I also have to say, I was one of the fellas shouting at the TV when he kicks that off the break, when he kicks that kind of attacking grubber kick into the, I was like, what's he doing kicking the ball away? But again, execution, the chase, you know, that battle was one they won, where the previous week James Lowe tries to keep a ball in and everyone's watching him. You know, there's no reaction, no support there. But Frawley was backed up by a good chase and they get that opportunity to go win the game. So that was, and I think that's what, you know, that it's not going to change the results of the others, but it just sends them into you know, a completely different mind frame of what's capable, given the players that weren't playing. And also from a management perspective, for Andy Farrell and the coaching staff to put on Blade and Frawley with so much time left. You know, it wasn't like they gave him 5 minutes towards the end. You know, they put them on and said, right, go win us the game. I think that was a huge showing and huge faith in, at the start of the year, probably four, you know, probably four, two, four choice nine and tens.
It really was Bernard, I think, on the bench, as Johnny said. That's a nice point to carry it on with. The fact that he went to the bench as early as he did, and I know in a few cases he kind of had to, where Andrew Porter and Tadhg Furlong both had to go for HIAs. But like, this was the Ireland 15 that finished the game, and basically this is the Ireland team that pulled back the 5 point deficit to go and win away against the world champions in South Africa. Healing, Herring, Beelam. Then was it Ryan Byrne in the second row? Baird, O'Mahony, Doris, Blade, Frawley in the halfbacks, James Lowe and Gary Ringrose on the wings, Stuart McCluskey and Robbie Henshaw in the centre, and Jamie Osborne at full back. If you had told us 2, 3 weeks ago that was going to be the 15 players on the pitch that was going to turn around a test in South Africa and win, we would have thought you were absolutely mad. But Andy Farrell, he said it after the first test, when Ireland had probably stayed in the game long enough, and you know, even though they weren't deserving, even though they didn't deserve to win the first test, they still gave themselves a shot at doing so. He constantly made the point that they don't go away. They always hang around a game longer than they should. And I know that doesn't make you an unbeatable team, but it probably means over the course of a few years that you're going to win a handful of games that you probably should have lost.
Yeah, and it's not a cliche with him. He and it's not a fluke either, because that's the type of player that he wants, and that's what he talks about. And you know, are we people who look after each other? Are we people who dig in? You know, what are we as a group? What do we represent? And like, even when we lose, as we did in Pretoria, or we did in Paris to New Zealand, or we did to England and Twickenham. I mean, I don't remember a team that's pulled away from us. You know what I mean?
The
And
only
yeah.
time it's happened is the first test in New Zealand. That's
Yeah,
the
but when
I was doing it last week. That's the only game in Farrell's era.
yeah, but when you look back at that game, the results, the score actually is they got a couple of like breakaways, you know, in Ireland. There was opportunities in that game. I remember, because I remember that game, and we did lose by more than a score, and I was going, well, how are they going to pick it up for the following week? And because if you remember, it looked like a very daunting tour. And apparently on that Monday or Tuesday after that first test, when he did his review, he was able to frame it in such a way that the players couldn't believe they lost. You know what I mean? And as in, these are the opportunities. Imagine we do this and we stop that and it's going to be different. And he basically made them believe that they could win. And likewise, this week, and I haven't spoken to any players, but he, like, the reality was, the game was close against the Springboks, but the Springboks had dominated us. They'd taken our defense apart. They had been very physical and they missed some goals. So you would have said, well, how can you get the belief that you're going to beat them a week later without Dan Sheen and some of the other injuries we had? But he was actually able to get that out of them. The whole management team deserve massive credit, but Farrell is very unique. Like, I've never met, like, when Joe Schmidt was at the helm of Ireland and Leinster, there was an aura about him, the way players spoke about him. It was different, and that was mainly down to the level of technical and tactical IP he was able to give them. You know, they really felt he's making them better. Farrell is different because he's making them better as rugby players, but there's this ability to get more out of players than maybe they're showing in the provincial jerseys, you know. And like Caelan Blade is an example. Caelan Blade, like, very, very good player, but probably this year, without Marmion there to share the load, his form at the end of the season for Connacht dropped off a bit. He looked tired, you know. To be able to bring him on early when Murray was playing really well, and for him to be nearly picture perfect under pressure is just another example. That Jamie Osborne, like, you know, when it was a left field pick to pick him at fullback, because obviously Jimmy O'Brien, has played there before. Leinster obviously haven't gone there with Jamie Osborne very much. And like over the two tests now, he's stepped up. You know what I mean? Frawley was picked ahead of, you know, two 10s that have been picked ahead of him in Leinster most of the year as a 10, and comes on and shows what he can do. Like, he's a very good selector. Maybe he's not just a great selector. He's just able to actually get another 5-10% out of players in that environment. And it's probably his greatest win, I think. I think it is. It has to be, because, like, as I said, I said last week, the New Zealand tour, New Zealand were in a bit of disarray, you know. They made changes after that tour to their coaching staff and to try and rectify what was just a camp in trouble. Whereas you can't say the Box are in disarray. They're still in the peak of their powers. The most experienced Box team ever. A very strong bench, not very few injuries. And, you know, we managed to come from behind. I think it's as good a win as he's had without some of the players that are key to Ireland. At the end of a long season, I think it's a masterful effort from everyone involved, but particularly Farrell deserves huge credit.
Quickly, Johnny, what do you think? Where would you rank it in the Farrell index? Interestingly, it was his 50th game in charge, which was a nice round number to work off as well.
I think Birch is 100% right, given the season that they've had, the right disappointments that they've had, and then you look at the players they're missing. They're missing arguably, you know, the best hooker in the world, the second best nine in the world, only to probably a generational player. Hugo Keenan is up there in terms of back three players. You know, he's probably going to be a Lion next year. You know, you look at who they lost and the team that finished. I think it's, and all the travel and everything, just at the end of such a long season, I think to get that out and get that emotional performance is just incredible.
One thing to, I might stay on the Frawley stuff and talk about him a little bit more, but before I talk about him specifically, it was great yesterday to look back when I was watching it back, to actually look back at like how the score even originated. And you can kind of see how like all the pieces matter along the way in Ireland having to be 100% perfect for essentially the final 3 minutes of the game, just to put themselves in a position to get the chance to kick the drop goal. Because it had all been a bit of a blur over the previous day. I got home from South Africa yesterday and I was watching the match back, and on 77 minutes and 15 seconds, South Africa have a line out 30 metres from the Irish try line. And you're just thinking they're going to win the ball. They're going to go through a handful of phases and Pollard will probably just take a drop of goal to make it a try game. And I was sitting there yesterday evening going, like knowing the result, thinking, how did Ireland get out of this situation? And it's when I watched it back, you see they go to Etzebeth off the top. Marco van Staden makes a carry up the middle and it's Peter O'Mahony and Rob Herring who get in there, double tackle, disrupt the ball. Ireland get a scrum. South Africa managed to wear down 90 seconds off the clock. So 78 minutes and 47 seconds, the scrum happens. Ireland lock it out, having been in a lot of trouble there. They move it off towards the left. Brawley has a little wraparound with Stuart McCluskey, who just about gets the South African players on the half turn enough and gets the ball back to Frawley, where he has that kick down the touchline. And as Johnny says, like you're looking at Frawley going, what on earth are you doing? But the kick is absolutely perfect. The chase down the line from James Lowe is perfect as well. And Ireland have that line out in the South African half. Then you need the line out to be perfect. Herring hits an absolute bullet low and to the front. And Tadhg Byrne beats Etzebeth up there to just about win the ball under a lot of pressure. Then Caelan Darras has to get over the gain line. Then Ryan Baird has to take on a carry just to straighten up the angle a bit. And then you're there with Blade finding Frawley for the drop goal. And it's Bernard, like it's just interesting. It's great to have the benefit of hindsight and look back at those things and see how like there's seven or eight players in that situation who had to do one or two or three jobs absolutely perfectly just to put Ireland in a situation where Frawley can take that drop goal.
Yeah,
but just before Birch goes on that line out, we scored a drop goal, a kick. Frawley kicks the ball out on the full on a crossfield kick. That's kind of speculative. So what Andy Farrell and what Birch has said, that these guys don't know whether they're done, like that could momentum shift. Like that can suck the life out of forwards when they've just got a drop goal. They're within two. Let's hold the ball, go. And he kicks the ball straight out. And you're like that must just have deflated the players. Well, most of the players, but they didn't. They got the ball back, you know. So as what Farrell says, that just shows that, you know, whatever 60 seconds shows what Farrell is saying. Mm. Like the players don't know when they're done. Sorry, Birch.
No, you're 100% right. And I think that's what Frawley has a little bit. Like he has big game temperament. He doesn't get spooked. Like it was a big mistake to make. If Ireland don't get another shot, you're talking about that has been one of the opportunities missed. But against the box, you have to go for those plays as well. I mean, yeah. And also, like, people say, no, like, the grubber kick. The reality is, with the pace the box have and maybe a lack of out-and-out pace Ireland have, Ireland are never going to go 50 metres against them. And the reality as well, the more phases you play, the less likely you're going to score. And Ireland did find it hard. Even though Ireland's attack was much better, we did find it incredibly hard to break them down. It was, mm-hmm. it was effectively that set piece, the goal line dropout, three-phase play that unlocked it in the end. But, our general phase attack, it was very hard to make ground. So against other teams, Ireland might have kept that in hand and tried to build 8-9 phases, get into their half, win a penalty, go to the corner, whereas, or obviously kick goal, but if it was close enough. But against them, it was the right decision. But again, it was the, and Farrell spoke about it, like, that's a makeshift backline, as you mentioned, and McCluskey's ability to stay square and fix Jesse Creel with Robbie outside him for a second, and Frawley gets around Jesse Creel, and that actually makes it easy to kick. It's not an easy kick, but it makes it easier for him to kick in behind. And then I just thought the level of, like, sometimes we get carried away with Farrell's culture and the aura and the charisma, and we forget that Ireland are actually very detailed. And, like, I think, if you want to see detail, look at that drop goal phase play, the last one where, they just create a perfect position in the middle of the field. Okay, it's a long way out, but then the block, and it's obviously been quite controversial in South Africa because Colby fell, but just the staggered nature of where Darras had been and were. I mean, he actually had a sweet swerve around him, whereas sometimes you see two players up flat together, and once he gets past Darras, he's straight onto Frawley's toe. Like it was It was picture perfect. Caelan Blades pass. And again, Frawley just wanting to take responsibility. And that's why I was going mad during the year that he hasn't been given a chance for Leinster at 10, because I know he's not perfect at 10, but he can't be perfect because he hasn't played enough. But what you can see in him is, and Farrell saw it in him last in New Zealand, and anytime he's had an opportunity to play, he's looked like he embraces those occasions. And I'm so fascinated to see what the future's what future lies in store for him when he comes back to Leinster, and does he get game time at 10? Because I think from a Leinster point of view, unless they play Barrett there, which obviously would be a big shift for him, if they want to have if they really want to go after winning trophies, I think he has to be given a chance at 10. Mm-hmm. And from an Irish point of view, like realistically now, when you look at all the other provinces, he is the backup to Crowley. And if he's not playing a certain percentage of his game time at 10, I mean, from a national point of view, that's you're not going to get as lucky as you, it's not lucky, but you can't expect someone to come in and save the day or start if Crowley's injured, and be at a certain level if they don't play 10 for their club, you know. So very, very interesting to see how that unfolds.
It is, and Johnny, like we asked Andy Farrell obviously after the game, can he kind of push the provincial coaches in a way to not even just that out half as well, but, you know, other positions, like they were talking about switching Tom O'Toole to Loosehead or anything like that, trying to get game time. But specifically on Frawley, like he said, he can't really, he said it's not his position to be telling provincial coaches how to pick their teams. But it was notable that he did say he thought that Frawley has earned his chance now to prove himself at out half provincially.
Yeah, well, look, I think the proof is in the pudding and what he's done when he's given the opportunity. I think even the Toulouse final, there was a bit of a step change in the gears in terms of, you know, how Leinster played when he was at 10. So, yeah, but, like, you know, he's right. He can't force anything on anyone. But, you know, I think watching that and watching the cameos that he's had at 10, I think the Leinster management would be crazy not to look at that. They obviously have a wealth of riches there in terms of numbers of 10, and then, you know, you have to fit in, you know, 4 into 2. So it's, but they have that luxury, but they're going to have to make that tough decision and hopefully, as Bert said, from an Irish perspective, nail their colours to the mast with one of them and then go for it. But I think at that, with what he's done, with the cameos he's had, Foley deserves that opportunity.
Bernard, would you be fairly optimistic about what the short to medium term at least is holding it out half for Ireland, considering we've just spent the last few minutes talking about the balls Ciarán Frawley has shown in one of the biggest occasions he's had in his career. Before that, Jack Crowley had an excellent tour as well and has had a brilliant season and is showing all the good signs and a couple of the raw signs as well, where there's development to be had, but he's had an excellent season, an excellent development. And we're still to see Sam Prendergast come through. It seems like there's a lot of options there all of a sudden.
Yeah, no, there is. Yeah, 100%. I thought Crowley was excellent in both tests, particularly the second test. I mean, he laid the foundations for us. And, you know, I think that him doing win the Grand Slam, or sorry, win the Six Nations and playing a huge role in winning a test match away from home in South Africa. You know, we can be happy now that he is Sexton's successor and he's bedded in very quickly, I think, to be fair to him. Frawley, we're excited by him. Sam, we're excited by. And it's just a case of seeing, you know, how it all unfolds. Can Ross or Harry step up now? You know, mm-hmm. Can they use this preseason to come back and find another level of form, or find a back, well, for Ross to get back to the form that he was in? He just had a dip, obviously. That's what we need. I don't think it's ideal that four of them are in one province, but that's just the way the Irish system is working at the moment. So, but yeah, it's looking a bit better. There's definitely a huge amount of upside in Sam as well. And it's, again, it's just a case of how good he can be by this time next year, really, and whether Ireland and Easterby, you know, give him some game time in November, and how it all plays out.
One of the other positions then, where we've learned a lot about what we have going forward, and in a positive sense, Johnny obviously is full back. Where had you asked? Well, I'm going to exclude you actually. Had you asked myself and Bernard 3 weeks ago, where was Jamie Osborne going to be playing full back at this in this series? We probably would have thought you were mad. You've obviously gone back a bit with Jamie. Could you have seen Osborne at full back in Test rugby coming?
Well, not really. It's where he's played all his, all his youth rugby. And, you know, in the Leinster age grade stuff, he was predominantly a 15. I thought he was going to end up as kind of Gary Ringrose's successor at that 13 slot was where he was going to. But I think he's probably going to move into that, potentially that mold of that 13, 15 space. He was always very good in the air, very good left boot. He had all the attributes, big, strong guy, good in the air, has all the attributes to be a top class 15, top class 13. I think his versatility is going to be a good thing for him. But from a depth chart perspective at 15, we were all, and with the consecutive games that Keenan had put in, everyone was like, what's going to happen here? Jimmy O'Brien has come straight back to form at Leinster when he was, in any opportunities he's got with Leinster, with Ireland, he's been very, very good. So you felt that, he was there, but, I didn't see that. It's obviously now, from a depth chart perspective, a stroke of genius by Farrell to have that. And you have three guys, one right footer, two left footers that are there that can fill that slot very, very seamlessly. But I think Jamie took a big step forward from, he was very good the first week, a couple of things kind of went awry, but last week, only for the bounce of a ball, he was probably pitch perfect, and that was probably trying to not make the same mistake that he made last week in terms of that ball on the edge. But the bounce just, it's a ridiculous bounce and there's nothing he can do about it. But I think it's been a really, really good series. And I think he acclimatized, probably in the first 15 to 20 minutes against Toulouse, there was a couple of moments where he was probably a slight bit off, but his progression through has been top class, and he was excellent. And they put him under huge pressure, and he answered every single call the South Africans threw at him. So absolutely delighted for him. He was excellent.
Yeah, more so than last week, Bernard. This week they really, really peppered him with kicks, and I think the biggest compliment you could give him this week was just everything was done without any fuss. Came up and caught his kicks, and even early in the second half, there's one absolutely first couple of minutes when Sasha Feinberg in Gamazulu makes a little half break, puts Cheslin Colby away, or puts Arense away, I think it was, and Osborne has to come up with a one-on-one tackle pretty much as the last man, line of defence, and just makes it no fuss. And every question that was asked of him last weekend, aside, as Johnny said, from that bounce, which was probably unlucky, you just really have to say, he was absolutely top drawer.
Yeah, it was interesting. I thought, it's rare I've seen a Springbok team getting so little return out of contestables.
Yeah.
It's a big part of their game. And every time he caught it and did, as you said, did it with a minimum of fuss, you could just feel the Irish team growing around him. And when you're playing a team at the box who want to go after that area and you feel that security behind you, it's massive. It was Rob Kearney-esque, really. It was just done with no fuss. That tackle was a very important tackle and a hard tackle to make. And obviously, he'd missed a tackle early in the game. Now, it was a very hard tackle the previous week. But I just think, and you speak to look at any of the Leinster players who, because it's hard to come in from the youths like he has. He's not a talker. Yeah. As such, he's quite a shy kid, but he picks things up so quickly. And to pick up international fullback play in effectively 2 weeks, that's nearly unheard of. That's so rare. Yeah.
It's incredible. The only two people that I've seen since I've been coaching kind of schools and youths and club stuff that have picked up stuff and asked the right questions instantly are Sam and Jamie. It's incredible. And that, his character is no fuss. Mm-hmm. You explain something to him and he's like, yeah, okay, fine. And then he does it. Literally to the to the millimeter of a step of something, it's done exactly as well. And that's my experience with Jamie. It's incredible, his understanding. And he put, I think people probably don't know, but like, he puts a huge amount of work into that off the pitch, from watching, you know, watching games. You know, I'd say he lives on Huddle in terms of all types of games, in terms of reviewing, previewing. He is just an out and out student of the game. And, you know, how he does these things in no fuss, that's just his character, and he just gets them done. You know, it's he's a top class individual, but I don't think anyone can underestimate, and I wouldn't say a lot of people know, the amount of work that he puts in from a viewing rugby perspective is off the charts. And I've seen that firsthand, with my dealings with him over the last couple of years.
It's going to be really interesting, Birch, to see how often he gets a chance to play it at fullback now for Leinster next season. And obviously Hugo Keenan will be around again, and, you know, that would close the door, you would probably imagine, for some of the bigger games. But particularly in the in the second half of the season, when Jordy Barrett has arrived, and I think one of the questions people had when Barrett was signed was, well, how is that going to impact Jamie Osborne and take away his minutes in the centre? All of a sudden there's an avenue there at fullback for him to be used a lot more. And particularly off the back of the Kieran Frawley stuff, it would be slightly awkward if Leo Cullen just wasn't using Frawley now, or using Osborne now next season as fullback, where you'd end up in a situation where there's another player where Andy Farrell and Leo Cullen are potentially looking at and seeing two very different things.
Yeah, it is. It's not going to be. It's going to be difficult because Jimmy O'Brien obviously has been good for Leinster at fullback, and he's still got a huge amount to offer. And yeah, Jamie obviously has done a good job for Leinster in the centre as well. So with Natai gone, if anything happens, Robbie or Gary, you know, he's probably going to be called into action there. So I think the fact that Leinster haven't won anything for a couple of seasons, surely they're going to be a little bit more ruthless in their selection. And I'd imagine that one of the, they'll have to have looked at selection over the last 2 years as being a potential area of an error. And I mean, also it can be sometimes quite hard for players to prove themselves if they don't get enough opportunities. But I just think what those two players we've been speaking about, Frawley and Osborne, have done at a test level now, has to have helped push their case for more game time in those positions. And it's a tough balancing act for Cullen and Nina Barr to try and keep everybody happy and to try and share it out. But the reality is, what they need to do is be in a position next May, June, that they know exactly who their best players are, and they've got sufficient cover, so they can go and win a Champions Cup in Wales or win a URC. And yeah, there's nothing focused in the mind like a lack of success. And I think it's probably the timing for those two players couldn't be better. Obviously, you prefer they were going in on the back of having won something at provincial level, but I'd imagine that Leinster's going to be less comfortable this season than probably has been for a long time in terms of right to game time.
Yeah, it will be interesting just to see how those selection calls shake up over the course of the year, Johnny.
Yeah, it will. I do think from with Frawley, if you go 10, if Frawley is 10 and then Jamie, it kind of puts you back to a more a more used dynamic in terms of your bench setup, that, you know, Jamie can be that 23 that can cover 13, 15 and wing if needs be. And if that means that, you know, Frawley then, you know, if he's your starting 10, it allows then a lot less movement around your back line. You have one person that can cover from literally from 12 out.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the critical big games, it allows you settle on that. Does it help, you know, obviously, you know, it doesn't help other guys in and around, you know, in the greater squad, but from a selection perspective, it allows you kind of go back to more of a, you know, a traditional selection there rather than kind of having two hybrids, maybe a Frawley's on the bench, and you know, but then it just frees up the bench dynamic a bit more for you.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating. I'm actually really looking forward to covering Leinster next season as a journalist, because it oftentimes covering Leinster can be quite dull, because it's just, you know, comfortable wins every week and there's no fascinating selection storylines. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens there over the course of next season as well. Another player, speaking of Leinster actually as well, I do want to specifically mention Bernard, and it's someone we talked about last week who had a lot of weight on his shoulders this week, Ronan Kelleher. And one thing you said actually last week, which kind of rung in my head over the last couple of days, is that as a player, Ronan Kelleher is probably more suited to starting games. And I think you were 100% proved right on that one at the weekend. That was as good, I think that was as good as I've seen Kelleher for a long time.
Yeah, look, I think we've forgotten how excited we were when he broke through, because he got that starting position. And you would have said, like, he was a future test line at the time. Yeah. But obviously, Dan Sheehan is phenomenal. It's very hard to justify not starting Dan Sheehan because of his consistency and what he brings. But I think Ronan hasn't... I don't think he's that suited to be an impact player. Obviously, he can do it. But probably we saw the gap being bigger than it actually is because of the fact that Dan was starting and Ronan was coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And now he got that start. I mean, he showed, like, he went toe to toe with that Springbok pack and he dominated, and it was a brilliant performance by him. And I think it now means we have two top end hookers, with Herring being very accomplished as well. I mean, Herring is a very safe, and I don't think he has the same X factor as the two lads, but you'd have no fear if he was starting a test match either. So we've got three.
There's no panic if you see his name on a team sheet if there's injuries or something like that.
No, 100%. So we're in a really good place, but I do think that you may see a little bit of if Farrell can just get a little bit more depth. The fact that that bench, you know, earned the trust by what they did, that we may start to see the bench being used a little bit differently in Ireland. And maybe some games, you know, when Dan comes back, the Kelleher will start and Dan will have to come on and finish, like Malcolm Marks and Bongi do. And that's a great place to be. But, like, Kelleher needed to take that opportunity, and he absolutely nailed it. And, and there would be a lot of pressure on him, because I'm sure he was to look, because some people were talking, oh, do we start Herring? Do you remember, there was a debate about, do you start Herring?
I asked you that exact question.
Yeah, and in fairness, and you're right to ask it, because we hadn't seen that for a while. I can understand why we hadn't seen it, but I just thought he left us in no doubt that he has a huge amount to offer Ireland over the next year, next 9 months when Dan recovers. But potentially when Dan comes back, that there's a little bit more, you know, sharing of the start.
Yeah, certainly is. We'll finish up. I've got a few listeners' questions I want to go through before we finish up here. A couple of these are just two questions more or less along the same line of things around players to watch for next season. So Johnny Matt on Twitter says, you can both contribute to this. Name a breakthrough player in each province to watch out for next season. And then also Kieran Gallagher, probably not that one from Liverpool. He says, who from the current crop of under-20s do you think will make an impact at provincial level in the next couple of seasons? So who are you looking at around the under-20 level, or maybe who's just finished under-20, who you think next season is primed to really, really break out, or someone you're just really, really interested to see?
I think Brian Gleeson, I think, is probably someone that I think has an opportunity. He's powerful. He's abrasive. He's someone that I think, given some opportunity with, I think if he can target 10 to 15 games potentially for Munster next year, get into kind of being consistently in the Heineken Cup squad, or, you know, a cup or three or four performances in the Champions Cup, I think he's someone that could really kick on. I also think that, and I speak about him a lot, but I do think it's a pivotal season for Sam next year, for Sam Prendergast next year, with the opportunities that are That could be there for him, whether he gets capped in the autumn or not, whether that can propel him through. But you would think that he's on the trajectory given that the squad he's been in. But they'd be two players in particular that, you know, that I think have a. And then obviously Evan O'Connell, you know, his size, his strength. They're two forwards that I think have a big. Big opportunity. I could list off a name of loads of Newbridge College lads, all right, that are going into the sub academy this year that might have, you know, in 2 years' time, we'll probably be talking about one or two of them. But yeah, they'd be, I think, from an under Chinese perspective, those two forwards would be certainly two guys that I think, you know, have an opportunity to really change things up.
Anyone else for you, Bernard?
Yeah, from the 20s, I like Danny Sheen, Frankie's nephew. I think he's a very talented hooker, and just looking at the, you know, Scanlon had a very good season, but there may be an opportunity there just over the next couple of years to push through in Munster. I think he's a good footballer. He's got a real edge to him. Hugh Gavin in Connacht, I think he'll get game. I think Connacht signing Josh Ione, obviously with JJ being injured, his skill set, the way Mark Sexton and Peter Wilkins want to play. There's obviously, they've lost some experienced players with likes of Farrell and Daly leaving. But there's a group of youngsters there in Connacht, in the backs in particular, that I think will get a lot of game time next year. Challenge Cup will be probably a good thing for them in terms of being able to give them game time in less pressurized environments. And I think Hugh Gavin is someone who may end up being, you know, in a year's time, someone we're talking about as being Connacht's next full international. So they're the two for me.
Anyone in Ulster? We've gone through three of the four provinces. Anyone in Ulster that we can give a bit of optimism for?
Yeah, look, I think we saw them. I think Richie put them. The ones that come to mind are the ones that Richie brought into the team. Quite late. The Clerk is obviously very exciting. He's a very good recruit, you know. He's a very good recruit to their academy, very talented. I think Richie will trust in you. I think Richie's first year next, obviously he found some good players and got him back into form at the end of the season. But I think next year, given the kind of restraints around budget, he has to find a couple of those, you know, youngsters to come through and push. And I think he understands those players. He's worked with most of them. And he will go to them and trust them. And it's probably a good place to be as a youngster. Of all the four provinces next year, I think Ulster's probably the place where those youngsters will get most game time.
Mm-hmm. And then one from Robespierre. Ira Few doesn't do dramatic change generally, but given out half and prop issues, will Humphreys be more interventionist, moving players around provinces to ensure they get game time? And in line with that, I suppose, Bernard, we were speaking to David Humphreys last week, and it was actually after we recorded our podcast, so I didn't get to put the question to you, but he kind of answered that question a lot by saying he/the IRFU will not move players against their will, but he was fairly straight on the fact that they're not necessarily going to be looking too kindly on players who are happy to sit third and fourth in a depth chart at a given province if there is a hole available to be filled at a different province.
Yeah. And I think that's the only way to do it if they're not willing to. And I'm not for moving players, and who someone doesn't want to go, but
yeah.
it's a sales role. You know what I mean? It's a sales role from the other provinces. Mm. It's a sales role in terms of can the other province convince them they're going to make them better? And unfortunately, I suppose for the other provinces' point of view, players who've been bench players for Leinster have been able to get picked for Ireland. And that's the challenge. Until that changes, now I think the fact that Leinster haven't been successful over the last couple of years, as you would have expected, is a help to any of those other problems who are trying to poach players from Leinster. But the reality is, I mean, Osborne and Frawley, they're not first choice for Leinster, and they've had big influence to the Test series, you know what I mean? So that's the challenge. So unless Farrell kind of changes that policy, at the moment it's nearly safer to stay in Leinster than move, and that's always in players' heads. So yeah, it's not forcing people. It's actually how attractive can the other provinces make it, and how much weight is Farrell really going to put on playing regularly for a province, not your province.
And the other point you said, it kind of links to that, Johnny, as well, was that after Rabah Slimani, who was confirmed this week, that's going to be the last non-Irish qualified front row signing in Ireland. He didn't say until when, but it's essentially for the foreseeable future until they're satisfied with the depth. It will potentially be interesting if you're a young Irish prop or something like that, all of a sudden contract negotiations are going in your favour.
Yeah, look, I think he's kind of made his mark, quickly in terms of stamping that, you know, what he said about the front row, that's huge. And he's more or less said that if, you know, third or fourth in the depth chart, you know, you want to go get game time and put yourself out there. So he's certainly making his mark early enough, but that's his job. He has to promote those guys, younger guys looking at that, the opportunity to, you know, I know there's been a couple of props, you know, who have signed academy contracts straight out of school rather than, you know, go into a sub academy in provinces. So those opportunities are there. And if you can get on the, you know, if you can get into the academy, get a couple of games underneath your belt, there's opportunities for development and full-time contracts. So, yeah, but you have to perform. So, you know, he said that, but, you know, the guys and the younger props, they have to realise the opportunity they have and have to try and grasp it.
Absolutely. It's that I'm really looking forward to seeing how that develops as well over the next year or so, and how those chess pieces can be moved around or made to fit in certain ways. It's going to be fascinating to see. Fellas, that's been brilliant. Thanks very much for today. And that's it for this season as well. We're all going to take a little break here for a few weeks and catch our breath and let Bernard go off and hopefully get an Olympic medal. All set for that, Bernard?
Yeah, getting there. Logistics this week. I go to Paris on Sunday. So, we're in, I can't wait. We're in a good place. Horses and riders are in form at the moment. So it's going to keep it going for another couple of weeks.
How many medals for Birch? Many from the equestrian side. How many are you going to say? Put you on the mark.
Hopefully team show jumping gold, and our venters are hitting form at the right time. So that'll be another four. So that'll be eight medals.
Eight. Okay. Yeah. So do you reckon overall, from an Irish perspective, how many do you reckon we could get? Do you reckon we'd be close to 20?
It's going to be the best ever Olympic haul from an Irish point of view, but. Yeah, they're not easy one, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, listen, have a great
Andy
time.
Farrell. I need Andy Farrell to come in and give us a check off.
It's all about hanging around. It's just all around Arthur. About hanging around until the final minutes and
exactly.
And then. But listen, the very best of luck, and hopefully when we do speak to you again in, I don't know, maybe a month or 6 weeks' time, that you're there and you're talking about some great medals and some great times at the Olympics. Thanks as well, Johnny. It's been great having you all season as well. And thanks to all our regular guests too throughout the season, and to everyone who's listened, watched, downloaded, commented every week. It's been absolutely brilliant. We'll speak to you again soon and have a great summer.